not ignorant. The Eastern concept of infant, the member is completed, in other words, that member has to withdraw from the scene. That's the paragraph 2 of the opinion. And then it leaves the issue of whether that specific matter and the results of the concept of interest, if it is not serious, it is trivial, the committee can actually decide to say the member can stay and participate in the proceedings. That's just what the rule is saying. So then from paragraph 3 to 5, I'm going to unpack that a little bit in the legal opinion. I assume that the legal opinion has been distributed.
All members have the legal opinion. Okay.
When a member, husband or member spouse, I just took the wording of the rule, if a member spouse is being interviewed by the committee for a position, in my opinion, there's clearly a benefit that is accrued to that spouse, and therefore there's a conflict of interest. In other words, that member is then compelled in terms of the rule to withdraw from the proceedings. I didn't put it out in the legal opinion. Of course, if there's a failure to withdraw, then there is an issue of the discipline that will come in from the ethics side, from the commitment and ethics, members' ethics. But I don't think that's the case here at all. What we're dealing then with is the member has to withdraw from the proceedings. The proceedings I try to set out there, my view is that all the proceedings, not just the interview that we are talking about, it will also be the deliberation and the nomination process that the member will be conflicted in. So I would certainly advise that the member does not participate in any of the proceedings that's related to this position. And then in paragraph 6, I also advise that for issues of quorum and for decision-making process and basically for representation of the public, that the committee considers, I think it's political party that must consider to bring the alternate member if there has been an alternate member nominated for the conflicted member. I might add, and it was not part of the brief, but of course, if this member's spouse succeeds in its application to the board, there will be an issue there as well. That one will have to look at. I'm not saying that will definitely be a conflict of interest. That might be, in some instance, trivial. The committee doesn't deal only with the SABC, but certainly when the SABC board is here, one will have to look at whether the conflict of interest is that member of the committee. But that rule, one will have to determine on a case-by-case basis. There's no golden rule that one can say this member will always be conflicted unless that is clear, but I would say we deal with that on a case-by-case basis. If any questions, I'm glad to take some time to say.
Honourable members, any questions? No questions. That means you agree with the legal opinion. Thanks very much, Mr.
Sorry, ma'am. Just one thing that I've set out in the legal opinion, I'm not really sure whether the member then can participate as a member of the public. There's nothing preventing that, unless there's a disturbance and unless there's a different rule. That the conflicted member may participate, but may attend or view the proceedings as a member of the public, not as a member of the assembly. But as a member of the assembly, you still have certain rights within the committee to speak and so on. In any case, you cannot speak. So we must withdraw from those proceedings. So there's an issue, but I would actually advise the member, if the member is attending as a member of the public, not to try and make submissions to the committee. So we have a bit of self-discipline on that. The main thing is that the proceedings mustn't be perceived by an outsider to be biased. So that's what we'd like to protect. Thank you. Sorry for that statement.
Thanks, Mr. President. Thank you very much. Honorable Murugula, want an explanation so that we are clear. Maybe we haven't considered this. Where does the public sit then? Is it up there or here? In this case. Because in the family. You know that the price is right in the gallery.
That is for the committee and the safety side. I mean, those are some of the internal proceedings. If the chair of the committee is satisfied that the public sits maybe at the gallery at the back or has to sit upstairs in the back row, that's fine. The thing with the public, or if you want to put it in the best terms, the participation of the public in the committee, and that's subject to the ruling of the chair and of the committee. In other words, a member of the public has not a right to speak in this house. They can observe. But there is a grey area there because the public can make submissions to the committee and so on. And when you're dealing with this, it might be a difficult one because you're trying to say to a member of parliament, member of the National Assembly, in this process you're a member of the public. But we can't draw a clear line. You're wearing two hats there always. So that's why I look also at the issue of public self-restraint, self-restraint on the member side. But where they sit now is up to the committee to decide. If you feel in this instance, it's better to create physical distance. If there's nothing wrong with saying it's a public piece at the upper gallery or the back gallery or wherever. The challenge, I would say, in this instance, is that we treat the public participation as a whole. So if you want to say to the member you have to sit up there, then you'll have to ask the press and everybody to sit up there. And that's what I'm thinking, in terms of treating everybody equally for this process. So this is something to consider. You can't just single out one person. I mean, what if there is a spark of someone being interviewed but they're not a member of parliament? You know, we have to treat them at the same level, I would say. Yeah. We can even at that.
Thank you. Honourable members, I would like us now to close this matter. Let's take a straightforward decision and then we'll end this matter. Ms. Honorable Brooklyn, she is with us, she's sitting at the back. I don't know whether members, do you want her to sit at the gallery? Or I'm throwing it back to you so that you take decisions. So that after we don't have we don't suffer from it. Honorable Susan, doctor.
I think honorable member what is because this okay. Does that system
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think we all agree since the beginning of the fourth parliament and this committee sitting, it was common practice that members of the press corps and other members of the Department of Communications were sitting inside. And there's no problem about it. That's common practice since 2009. So I don't think there's any problem where they are sitting. They are not taking part in the discussions of this committee. They can sit in the press or wherever. But that is not important. Thank you.
morning, Mr. Mutinde. My apologies for taking you so late. I know you were early, but you were still dealing with other internal matters, in-house matters. I hope you will pardon us on this. Mr. Mutinde, can you please tell us about yourself and what you are doing? And why are you here? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chester Singh, and very indeed, I understand. And, good morning, and compliment Nyakong Azarayan to every honorable member in the house. My name is Lungko Mutinde, and I am here as nominated to add my add value to the Ethics Board as a member of the board, which I understand is a nomination that is informed by my experience in the broadcasting industry, having been through the entire value chain, both from a broadcasting and operational perspective to policy making and to regulation making, and currently supporting the entire development of the broadcasting industry. And over and above that, I think in view of my experience in corporate governance, leadership, and financial management, I suppose those are the considerations that have been taken into account when I was nominated. And therefore, I see myself as having to, as going to be able to add that value into the Ethics Board. Thank you.
Thank you, good morning, Mr. Mutinde. I hear that you are telling us about what you understand about the Broadcasting Act. And I just wanted to ask you if you deal with corporate governance and in terms of transformation, what areas do you think the board should focus on? Can you stipulate the areas where the board should be focusing on when in terms of transforming what we had in the previous?
Thank you, honorable member. I have the advantage of having been part of the process, both from transitioning from the pre-94 era, which was framed under the Broadcasting Act of 1976, and having been part and parcel of the new legislative framework and the regulatory framework. And I think there are imperatives that were imposed through the Act for a public broadcaster, and we transformed it from what it was, a state broadcaster, to a public broadcaster. And I think to a large degree, some of those transformational areas have been dealt with, but there remain huge gaps. If you go through the object of the Act, you'll see that there are imperatives in respect of languages, in respect of access, in respect of ensuring that the public broadcaster serves all South Africans fairly and provides information to the South African citizens. And I think to that regard, there remain gaps. More so on the television front, not all the South African languages are equitably available on our television screen. If you look at the content, it is not necessarily 100% and addressing the needs of the South African citizenry and the country. And if you look at the question of universal access, there are areas in South Africa that have never seen television, and the only way of seeing television is if they then have to buy satellite and television and subscribe to and subscription television. Which, if you look at the economies of those areas, the people who do not necessarily have that luxury of money to do that. So I think that remains another area that needs to be dealt with sharply by the SABC. And generally, I think the SABC being a key source of news and information in South Africa is supposed to be the one that sets the agenda in terms of news and information. And I think it does that to a lesser degree. And it's supposed to position itself so that it is able to do that. The entire media landscape could rely on information and news that could be set or found by SABC right throughout the length and breadth of South Africa, and therefore be able to then ensure that such news and information are dealt with and are part and parcel of the body of news and information in South Africa. But I think they are not doing that much in this regard, and such that remains a gap. So in the nutshell, whereas they are complying to a large degree with the new license terms and conditions that were imposed by the regulator ICASA, which ensures that they deal with those public and service mandates and obligations, but their main gap, and I think that they don't get used to the field.
Thank you, Jay. Good morning. I have a few questions, so I don't know if you'd like to write them down, perhaps. My first question, and this is sort of a question that I'm asking everyone that comes in, are you associated or work for or in any way linked to a political party? And if so, which one? My second question would be this. The Broadcasting Act, in its fundamental principles and interpretation, says that freedom of expression and journalistic and creative programming independence of the broadcasters and the independence of regulations are identified as guaranteed by the Constitution. Now, I'm very interested in how you just answered my colleague's question with regards to news and information, as there has been much talk in South Africa about a media tribunal. I would like your opinion as to how you would protect the independence of the news agency of the SABC should a media tribunal come into effect, and what your opinion regarding journalistic freedom on a public broadcast is.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Your first question is whether I'm associated or linked to a political party. The answer is yes, I am a member, an ordinary member of the African National Congress and an ordinary member of the South African Communist Party. Your second question in terms of the freedom of expression and the media freedom. Firstly, I think the debate in respect of the media freedom is in relation to complementing and strengthening self-regulatory mechanisms in regards to print media. It does not have relevance in respect of broadcast media. You would appreciate that the broadcast media is regulated both. It self-regulates itself through the PSA, if you're a member of such body, or through the Independent Communications Authority, which then oversees and regulates all broadcasters, including SABC. So therefore, to the extent of dealing with broadcasting matters, the media feels that now is not relevant. But then your latter point related to that is in terms of the protection of the independence of the news agency. Indeed, I think both the Constitution and the Broadcasting Act provide for freedom of expression, the protection thereof, and journalistic independence in respect of programming and the operations of the SABC. So certainly, I think we have, the board has to ensure that SABC complies with the Act and also complies with the charter of broadcasting. And over and above the board, there is also the regulator, which is the CASA, that monitors that compliance. So certainly, one of the duties and responsibilities of a board member is to make sure that the corporation does comply with both the Constitution, the Broadcasting Act, the Electronic Communications Act, license terms and conditions as imposed by the authority, and any other related law, including looking at, which I think is one challenge that I think the SABC has regard to the findings of the Auditor General of South Africa. The challenge is for the SABC to relook at the financial regulations and see to what extent are they compliant with the Public Financial Regulations Act and related regulations. So as to then make sure that the whole financial management and regime of SABC is in line with the Act and the law. And I think the board has got that responsibility to make sure that there is that compliance.
Thanks, in some ways, my question is a bit of a follow-up to what is really an odd, but I'm going to be quite frank. Given the controversy around debate around press freedom and media freedom and so on, and what's been happening in our country, do you think under these circumstances you are able to exercise your judgment in such a manner that the public, the taxpayers in general, could be confident that you'd be acting in such a way that you'd be protecting their interests and not the interests of the political party that you're a member of?
Thanks, Jonathan, and honourable member, thanks. I think one, my record speaks for itself. I have presided or have been a member of the leadership and government of independent bodies since 1998, from the Independent Broadcasting Authority to CASA, and now the Media Freedom and Diversity Agency. And therefore, my appliance of the principles of the law has not been questioned throughout all my over 10 years experience in this regard. And I think if you look at what the debate is about, it's about compliance with the law. I have not, at least from a rational debate, heard people who are threatening press freedom in terms of what is being proposed from legislative interventions or regulatory interventions. The discussions have always been around how do we make sure that our media does comply with our legislative framework as is in South Africa. In respect of print media, how do you then make sure that it complies with the code of practice of its own body, which is the Press Council and Press Ombudsman, and how do you ensure and encourage that compliance? And in respect of broadcasting, that matter is not even questionable, because I think since 1994, the regulator being ICASA and IBA before ICASA has ensured that, including the CCSA, has ensured that to an extent that any broadcaster does know that it has to comply with the code of conduct of broadcasters, with the regulations prescribed by the authority, and all those have been tested in terms of their constitutionality. Similarly, I think the same regime prevails in respect of print media. The little challenge in respect of print media is to what extent is the current legislative regime discourage the non-compliance, and the debate is about then strengthening and complementing and ensuring that there is compliance. That, to me, is not a threat to media freedom. But lastly, I have been a member of the ANC from my young age, and when I was appointed both by President Mandela and President Mbeki to Parliament into IBA and the CASA, I was still a member of the ANC and a member of the Communist Party. And right through my being there, I have had to implement the laws that set up those bodies. And therefore, similarly, in the SNC board, I will make sure that we act in terms of the laws that govern the SNC board and the broadcasting industry at large.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Ms. Olunko. I have just few questions. The first one is in regards to your qualifications. In one of your qualifications in your CV, you have stated that the course that you have attended on strategic leadership. I just wanted you to share with us how the skills that you have acquired from the students will assist and bringing stability as a board member in the SADC. I think you remember that the dissolution of the former board and the following board after that one, there's been a problem of problem of leadership on media situation. How was that skill assist input and things correct? The other question is that do you have any business interest? I could not see or find anything in your CV. Also, in regards to other boards that you are a member, how many boards are you a member? If by any chance you come like here and appointed, won't that affect your attendance in other boards or in the SADC? How often can those other board meetings take place? The other issue is in regards to the funding model of the SADC. I think as the current CEO of NGO, you are seeing the current funding model of the SADC. What do you think about it? Is it relevant now or something needs to be done on it? Lastly, Honorable Chair, it is in regards to the political interference. Some of my colleagues have asked me that question that they've asked me indirectly and directly. In the past, we have heard all political parties saying that there are political interference, especially by the ruling party, in taking decisions of the board at the SADC. When there are problems at the SADC, it was worse in the current board. When the minister and the political leader try to intervene, it was always viewed as a political interference. What do you think the relationship between the political leader and the minister must be between them, the minister and the board, if by any chance we get appointed? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, Honorable Member. Maybe let me start with a quick one in terms of business interest. Not really. I am part of initiatives that are not yet off ground, and therefore they have not taken off ground, so that is the degree of my involvement in that regard. In terms of other boards, and substantially one of the boards that I serve, which is a board that is quite active in the Board of the World Summit Awards, which is based in Austria, which meets twice a year. And therefore, I do not think that my participation there would affect my participation in other boards. The other board, which is the Eastern Cape Information Technology Initiative, also meets four times a year. So I think my membership to board is manageable at this point in time. It is not at all at the degree of religion. The question of qualifications are related to experience. I think both academically I've had the training in respect of strategic leadership, corporate governance, and so forth. But over and above that, I have been directly involved in practice, both from overseeing and running an NGO prior to 1997, and then since 1997 until now, I've been part and parcel of leadership and corporate governance of organs of state, and as such, I have that practical experience in that regard. I think in respect of the challenges at SABC or ideas in terms of how to manage that, I think first and foremost, it is important that in understanding the role of any leader in an institution is to also understand where is that role prescribed from. So therefore, it is important to first and foremost understand the act. And I think if the board is able to find its step one from the act, it should be able to then manage its challenges, both at leadership, corporate governance, and management level. Because I think these roles are quite prescribed in the act, in the charter, and then also in the regulations that govern the industry. More so in the sector of broadcasting, it is a regulated industry. So there is a framework. Then, in addition to that, then we then use our experience in terms of leadership at strategic level and corporate governance and financial management to then see how we ensure that we are in line with not only the prescribed laws, but also just practice in the industry, as for example, King 3, how we comply with those imperatives that are provided in terms of that framework. So I think that experience from my side will ensure that at least we minimize the challenges if they are still any at SABC. The question of the funding model is a fundamental question that is being discussed globally. And our public broadcaster is a unique in the world. A public broadcaster that is largely dependent on commercial revenue. And I think that is a matter that needs a review, because if you look at the charter in terms of the Broadcasting Act, if you look at the license terms and conditions, there is a lot of public service obligations that SABC has to provide. And if it is to rely on commercial support in order to provide those services, it could compromise the possibility of providing those services to the level that it is expected. In addition, our legislative framework, if you look at from the Independent Broadcasting Act that was repealed by the Electronic Communications Act, there's a provision there in terms of Section 2 that requires that South Africa promote, protect the viability of a public broadcaster. So having regard to that legislative framework, I think we need to, as South Africa, agree that we do need to contribute publicly to the viability of SABC through public funds. And we need to begin to face that, because prior that has been to some degree harmed. That is the public fund contribution. But then it went down under the set goals by the SSC itself to make sure that it is self-reliant. But I think that compromised a number of other considerations, and I think we do need to review where we are and therefore contribute public funds to ensure that SSC contributes to its public money. It is unacceptable that 17 years or 15, 17 years of our democracy, you go to Alfred and Dole, the citizen's fantasy, you can't tune into television if you are there. Clearly, you need public funding support that will ensure that you are able to and comply with that and public service mandate. The last question, and therefore in the nutshell, I'm saying the funding of the SSC does need a review, and South Africa needs to dispassionately look at this question in a manner that will ensure that we comply with the Section 2 of the Electronic Communications Act and therefore protect the viability of SSC. In respect of political interference, I think this question has two elements. There is possible actual, and then there is perceived. And to the extent that there is actual interference, I think it is necessary for such facts to be provided so that they are tested against the legislative framework that exists. And I think there is systems and procedures to deal with that. But to the extent that there is perceived, we need to provide the information that is necessary so that we manage that those perceptions and provide the facts. But unfortunately, you will continuously have that those perceived interferences, allegations, because SSC is a contested terrain. It is a public institution that every South African rightfully wants to ensure that SSC serves him or her. So there will continuously be those perceptual allegations. But to the extent that there is actual, we need to test them. And my experience this far is people tend to throw allegations but are unable to provide the facts that then will ensure that if you then go through the system, the regulatory framework that exists, and test those, then you will be able to find the facts related to those. So, in the nutshell, what I'm saying is that our legislative and regulatory framework provides for how to deal with such instances. And we do need, therefore, to use our systems and procedures in order to deal with those if they exist. But to the extent that they are perceived, all we need is to provide the information and facts so as to manage those perceptions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Mr. Mtinde, these three companies in which you hold office, which are doing business in the media, electronic communication, or broadcasting industry, they are Zimmy, CII Broadcasting, and the Market Demand for Line Breaking. What is your involvement? And then maybe if you get appointed as a member of the board, don't you see any potential conflict of interest in the near by future? The second one, I see in your CV you attended the Institute of Directors in 2010. And I believe you are aware of the challenges the agency has been having recently, one of them being the issues of corporate governance. Secondly, you know that the SSC has also adopted a turnaround strategy. How will your experience assist the SSC to implement the turnaround strategy, especially in relation with regard to change management processes? Thank you.
Over to you, Honorable Mukunde. I hope you have all the questions.
Yes, I can submit the
questions. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Member. In respect of your first question, the three initiatives which are in the broadcasting space are not yet licensed. Both the YASME and the CII market demand, they are not yet licensed, they are initiatives in Africa. And to the extent that they are licensed, I think obviously that will provide me a step back to look at to what degree can I participate in those in order to be able to manage potential conflicts if it arises. And I think, as I said earlier, there is a framework, even toolkits. If you Google the toolkits that are available to manage conflicts of interest, if it arises over and above the legislative framework that is provided in terms of broadcasting act and the other laws in our broadcasting system. But at this point in time, they are equal to non-existing businesses because they are not yet licensed. The question of the Institute of Directors of South Africa, I am indeed a member of that institute, which is a very important institute for any person who operates at this level to be a member of and to be able to share with peers and the experiences and the knowledge and skills that help you to participate and comply with corporate governance and imperatives. Therefore, that membership is very, very important for me and it will ensure that it strengthens my input and value at SABC. The last question in terms of the turnaround strategy, I think one, we need to look at that strategy in terms of to what extent, first and foremost, in line with both the Charter, the License Terms and Conditions, the PFMA and Treasury Regulations, and of course the necessity that FFC needs to be able to be viable. So I think my experience right through my work life will help in making sure that we tighten up such a strategy in the year going forward. So I think we should look at that question of turnaround not only in terms of the short term, but we should look at it in terms of medium to long term. And therefore, I think one is able to participate in that process and ensure that we have an SABC that will serve South Africa in the manner that is expected in terms of the Broadcasting Act.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mzinde. You will be informed in due course after the committee deliberation. You will know how to be went about in the interview. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, to honorable members for the opportunity, and hopefully we together will make sure that we have a strong, viable identity. Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Eugenia Solisakula Ameyang. Can you please tell us about yourself? What are you doing and why are you here?
Thank you, Chair. Morning to all the members of the committee. As already you know, I'm senior. I'm here applied for the position to serve in the board of the SABC. Originally, I'm from Credo, born in the Kazoo, studying in the sixth grade, following the high school then. I'm blessed with two kids, finished after that one. I'm a widow with two kids, 10-year-old and 15-year-old. I'm here now. I'm here applying for this position to serve in the board because I think I've got what it takes to serve my country. I've got experience and the relevant qualifications. I started from the academia. I'm a teacher by profession too. And I started BCom with honors, and I've got an MBA in strategy and entrepreneurship. And I haven't realized that part of the problem that the board faces is related to strategy. And part of my experience in the working for the provincial government, I dealt with finances, which is policy wise, we move from like the green papers, the white papers, all those for the SEC skills development, I was directly involved in that. And also did a funding model for the institution, which later from the province side I came to manage that and monitor the finances. I also developed a tool for the fund utilization, whatever was given to the institution. And from there also I also dealt with government issues. You all probably remember that technical policies is different. So I drove the major projects. So we made them, made them one, those eight from 26 to 8. And then obviously came with different structures, government structures, set them in place, up to appointing the CEO of those institutions. So I was involved in all that. And also other things, probably relations, I drove the student relations. I came to students on finances. Most of the courses are related to finances. And the entitlement theory, where they think they can jump on the course list to give them money to go to the people and sample. So the training really reduced the conflict for about probably say by 60-70%, because they knew not just to come clean, but we need to budget for it, take from even a student membership. Alongside that, I'm a very developmental person that I've been in the same kitchen. There is an NGO called Diana, where I help women, young people, which led to some free scholarship in the US to do film production, very passionate about development. So later, a lot happened. I lost my husband, I'm still seeing my children, a widow, but I got was unable to re-engineer myself. I went to study an MBA at Oxford Brookes in England, and I think they have joined ESCOM, the powerhouse, and I'm blessed to be there with the experience that the Ghana's industry organization with all the problems. I think we probably have similar problems. So there I deal with various things, business, strategy, for my division, which is running over 10,500 staff, business planning, integrated risk management, and recently, such as Moose said, I've also been blessed to be admitted as a board member for the CBE, which my colleagues have said that I can lead the finance committee. Even there, within the past 2 months, I developed a framework and interrelating the interdependencies. But my area of strength is strategy and finance. So that's about that, and I thought then with all those skills, let me look to the problem that the corporation goes through or has gone through, and even currently. I kind of think, you know, I was saying we don't have the skills in the country, you know, so to see what opportunity to serve in that post with all the skills that are really highlighted. Thank you, Chair.
I just heard that you have done your MBA, yes, and I think you are applying
acquainted with the issues that and challenges that are in the SABC at the moment. And I think you are quite informed about the guarantee that SABC has got from government. And I suppose under normal circumstances, it does not what we want SABC to go on to be. And as somebody who is trusted in the area of finances, I would like you to explain to us what model, funding model, do you think SABC should use? Yes. And then the other question is about what should be your thinking as a board member in terms of the standards that have been adopted by SAFA, so that the DVB2 on the digital migration, how it's going to affect SABC and how SABC can use it. What benefits do you think we are going to get from SABC when we switch off from analog? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam, for the question. I'll start with the second one, because I've already elaborated on the first one. With the migration from analog to digital, my brother came from England, and I've got 3 days, 6 years. You know, those are a good, you know, technological advancement. For a country like this, we have the ability to find a way. In most cases, when you implement something, you need to have the risk and the benefit. You know, do your systematic analysis. So if you could leverage that, especially for education and other things in the rural areas, but then we need to look at the cost implications. And so our proposal would be, we need to phase it in. For most of these things, if you can't just launch it full scale and then it crashes, then how do you deal with someone in the time that you can't access the radio and all of the new technology? How do we deal with that kind of like thinking? Who funds that? Are we gonna cut people off? So there needs to be, you know, a phased process to implement it. And I know there are several cost implications. If the first world crisis that implemented it about a year ago. So obviously blame from the technical question that you don't just be too early, you cut people off. So it needs to be implemented and it's still costly. So what we said that allows it to good technology. There's an education and someone who's got passion about education, we could use it where you can. You know, like Facebook sort of, you know, you could use a educational program, whether it's carry guidance, and then reach other people in other places. You know, so it's a technological advantage for cost some money, but it could be good advancement. My question would be, would you have to cut other people off, especially the rural area? So I hope you find that. And the second one about the funding model, having to in English, I look at the trust report, I told you, and in my MBA, I also did organizational analysis, which I think a lot of colleagues are interested in that. When I analyze it, somehow I was able to say, I want to give you an example if you go up online. I looked at the financial statements and the previous, after the report, the meeting you read on the 27th, some of the issues really, they don't need to be there. But if you look at it, all you have to do is a root cause analysis. So it's even how, such as the compact, the table of the compact, how the organization is compacted. And it's good, I want to say, most of what I've achieved, I'm just probably not going to stick a name to in my diploma for diploma in company direction. Most of what you achieve is in studying at night. The board is not coming, you're coming to take decisions, having studied. So having studied the one, you're kind of thinking, do you people see this? And I'm going to reduce over the line. On commercial revenue through increase of public funding. That's the previous report, not the recent. What I'm thinking, the same funding we're committing for education, for schools, you know, that somehow my encompass is the state institute, you know, the SOE. So that's the KPI. Then how they're gonna do it, they say, okay, the target is the engaged government, so it makes the target. So I'll take you through this, then I'll come up with how I'll solve it. So I'm waiting for the next process. And yes, that means they must increase finances, remove rates, that's what they say. Okay, they have not achieved that because they're competing in the same resources. My question is then, for how long are we going to be? Can't it be entrepreneurial? So probably also know something I have done too is entrepreneurship. The next one is financial report. We say proper marketing, we say cost saving, that's what we want to do. And I can say, well, I'm a kind of person, I look at the first 20, I look at the first 26 KPIs or proper issues. So they say proper marketing, you know. I kind of thought, if you have a thing, it's not a thing, let's do that. You say, live within target. So my other problem is, things are vague, they are not clear. If you give yourself money, you say, well, it's not in terms. If you say you buy A, B, C, I will pay you based on A, B, C. But if the A, B, C is great, you can get away with crime. Because I said, within target. To me, I'm asking a question, is the target the 10 rand or 100 million? That's the target. And then it says, I've not achieved. So they couldn't achieve it. To me, the world is to be, have a good business case, is whatever you do. Have a good business case, I've done a business case for security. This ESCOM is implemented about 3 years ago. Have a strong business case. And then, based on that, your risk and benefit analysis. We have a non-business case, we can't cost, it's kind of waste. I thought people would get, because you would get a bonus. Then you realize bonus based on what? But you didn't do your work in the same case where you are contracting. The words are really very close to my heart. It was the KPI of thinking about working as a player. I'm getting to find what this has financial education. That's where they use the money. To increase the writers, not a lot of writers, producers, and so not achieved. You know? Then, if you look at it, they'll be buying international content. So we can't develop talent inside. We'll probably use money to buy international content. Can't use that. We can't grow in-house skills to have our own producers. We've also got angels, Hollywood, to buy them. Which is expensive. Just to fly to a director for that. So when I started in one alliance, the financial test KPI, 7 of them were achieved 25%, 7 out of 20. The Brazilian financial report. And 5 were actually achieved. And 8 of the 20 were not achieved. 4 they were related to the board, not able to approve. Because all these things, you could say, all of these have brilliant ideas. If they won't have been in the board, these really members around this in the county are very tough with that. They won't have been in the board, all that will be competent people themselves, but with stability, then. So who do you think? Is it the CEO? Is it the executive? So this is the interrelation. It's like it's a strategic alignment. It's a very good thing. So my value is, it will be then, I'll assume that the stable board, all that you come back correctly, I'm afraid to do this. How can I get the audience to then be safe to that? And then the funding model. You could look at all that you said, the commercial audience. They need to be very entrepreneurial, look at even commercial funding, you know. It's also even cutting costs, don't even have to have money. That's what you realize. You give them money, you say, okay, let's go shopping. You will even have to cut costs, you know. Basically, even the market in Africa, I would say enterprise and all the production, well, I've traveled around Africa, what we have, what we're trying to have with it, they're even like, wow, you know. So, you come with that. But the compact, no one is that. If you really go and do this, you don't have to really interfere. Come, contact, you report on that, whatever tools we choose. And then the other thing that I mentioned, can you reduce funding? That is, doesn't pay money for food. There's some, even in sector 4, like kids that we find with some friends, basic income they don't have. And then you're wasting money on this. And also now, in the financial, I've identified quick wins. Yeah, all of this. These are my inputs that will be the quick wins which you could solve within the next 3 months. Where you take costs, there's policies. But if you have the money, you don't have policies. You integrated risk management. Because you still go down the same thing you went. And then you go to government. Then government will finish because we own the broadcaster. You know? That's all. You balance all these things. Remember, you come with the model. Let me tell you, identify. You look at the ground, the vegetable input. But to come with processes and systems to ensure that funds are directed to them, have been conducted correctly, clearly not big. You know, someone, when I look at them, I kind of to me like a joke. Didn't someone, you know, read this? So then say then after that then you monitor, but then the balance of having a strategic review, you are putting that way where the board leads that literally by example. So I want to say that you can tell me that this is commercial license, this is the obvious, but I expect entrepreneurship, creativity, either going to Africa, which is linked to telling our competent producers the whole produce strategy, then you tell them. You can start with Africa or certain. But then you still not keep doing that. You go take it and, you know, also not achieve all of them. So I plan to be done financially, but now not achieve. So you balance all those. I hope I've answered you. It's my analysis. Thank you.
Two questions. My first one is, are you associated in any way with a political party, and if so, which one? And my second question, in what you answered to my colleague's question, I've changed my question slightly. You said that you read through reports that were served to us on the 27th. And you said that there were things there that shouldn't be there, that didn't have to be there. Could you give me an example of one of those things and why you think that it was a problem that shouldn't be there?
Thank you. I'm sorry, the issue of the party, I think it's a problem. If you look at my nomination, it's a colleague, another board who nominated me. That's where we come up with some of these things. I've done non-degree public admin. Before even the election, they tell you there are people who are put because of the political advocacy. That is allowed the DG to expect that. To me, it's not important, it's more to serve your country. You know, unless I'm facing a career in the corporate. You know, I'm a nation, I hope I'm an achiever in own rights if you look at my nomination. So, the second one, I look at, I don't know, you seem to probably allow people to get away. When I look at the response, everything, let's the first one, is a reason of interest. I'll expect probably, I'm interviewed, let me try this thing here. Assuming I get appointed to stand that I declare this my interest. So you get a secretary, the board members, that have been declared, and it ends an open-ended question, declare their interest. That's one. Then you look at it, there are no policies. So there are about 5 or 6 issues where they say you are in the process of developing a policy. I mean, you throughout the, you know, almost end of the financial year or halfway for developing a policy. I'm wondering, I'm so allowing the system of policy, not of that policy, not being crazy, then using the gap to do whatever that you read about, where the members are contained looking, you know. So there are a lot of things that policies are not there. And another one, as the telephone said, I think the manager didn't understand the risk when you are signing the contract. It's a transport contract. The transport contract is $24 million. And it's like the response to the house was, I think the line manager didn't understand the risk when you are signing the contract. So if you were, why did you sign it? You know, those are the kind of things. It's a policy existing. They just not there. It's from procurement to even all these scenarios, you put the debt, if they're there, the debt was implemented. And someone not taking those things in their own, whether it's the board and executive, they just have no policies. I've read the whole 14 pages, that kind of thinking, you know, that's that. Those are the policies, especially that we have then, because the policy sector will be, there's no policy then, so we're looking. 24 million, 11 million. Someone is talking. So all of these place roles are taken. If I need a contract, it would be a contract secretary, a legal person to do it. I'm an expert in my field. This is what I want. I've done my business case. The other case, people go and drop in with no strong business case. Then when the company loses money, it's kind of, oh, I thought of this. And also for the poor legal money, you lose taxes. You know, so if you know that, okay, even if I do this, you know, they will be changed anyway, okay, they put knowledge. Then people will be giving away with money. Because the legal team or the company is being engaged outside. You know, there are those who money spent on consultants. There are others like the senior counsel who can help in the case and save us millions. Those are just part-time. But the technology that was used, if I could, let me check if I can even post it for you. I said, if I'm there, I'll make sure it's not there. It says, process of developing, that's in case it's drug prevention plan, you are in the process of preventing. So what is next in my drug prevention plan, fraud will continue. And there are no time frames. I remember one never asked what the time frame. No, all of them, there's like no time frame. So he said, blank check. No, I think somehow everybody needs to play their role. You know, the process, like the process, active process of discussing whether we should have three external auditors. That's the time. If I was there in the team comp, I said, these are the values, the criteria for auditors. I've checked the criteria. We all have the criteria, the skills, the knowledge, then we tick and say, it is this one. We are doing external auditors three. That delaying actually the process. So that's kind of that. I would have said if I was sitting, I said, okay, can you keep us a seat then? I'll call someone within the next 6 days. You know, so there's a lot of, you know, fluid arrangement. And then like open-ended questions. Not like, okay, next time you come. What I would also say, who agree on the reporting format, I would have a dashboard. Before the same time, when I said, I said it was all the good for Japan. There was this IT friend of mine, when he was doing MBA in Oxford. So he helped me with that. You know, I don't know just for when you agree on how we're gonna test him. Even with the color, if it's red, our government is sitting now in green. So when you are using it in our statistics and activism, it's you. So we would agree on the just for. And if you don't report, they don't bring reports to you. You said, okay, we'll send a report. How many employees are one of you? Those that you don't know, you can provide the support. It's not a problem, you can. You know, and agree, you could even send, there could be a check folder. So that's the two things I would say, never.
Are you affiliated with any political party? According to your previous chair, who nominated you? Recommended your name for the board. I'd want to know, are you affiliated to any political party? Number two is in regards to the funding model. When you're responding to that question, you mentioned something like cutting the cost, but you didn't tell us how and what to cut. So that's a little bit of confusion in that. And I'm also tempted to ask you this question. Are you familiar with the SADC funding model? If you're familiar with the SADC funding model, the current one that we have, do you think it's okay? Or there's something that needs to be reviewed, or that funding model can be reviewed? And if it can be reviewed, what is it that the forecast must be on it? Lastly, if I may check, do you have experience in communication and broadcasting?
For the political party, I'm a member of hope. I'll say that I've done hope thing. That's that. The second one, the funding model. I'm a familiar with the government funds the institution, and then they take part of their funding from single licenses and all that, and then commercial assessment and that. That's my understanding. Then, how cut costs? You said in the report where I was saying to your friend, how much petrol can you, when will you go for a petrol 24,000 a month? Will you go to Botswana, Zambia, and this? So, in fact, it's internal system. You could, you know, find a way to reduce costs. If you were having, like, if you were having breakfast with some benefits, most companies would do that to cut breakfast in our organization. You know, something with a negative. You know, the negative loss and that. You could cut costs You know, it's a little toxin. The little toxin that you can finish the whole vineyard. So start with internal cut costing and also tighten your system. Tighten the system that will make sure that whatever it is not wasteful. Also the business cases, those are the business and risk and benefit analysis. So as I was saying, so to come with a system, make sure before you agree on any $200 million, there's a business case. We know the risk. If it's in the national level, the risk, other risk will be the change, they will change. So those are the kind of things you can look at, and then also the being in the primera. You know, you take more for the same. You take more for the same. You really have to continue, make sure it's sustainable. Continue buying the medical content. Once we are not developing our own, so you could balance that. Yes, then the development is very important. The development of our own rights, our own producers, and the local content. And then explore the African market. So that is something I would say. And then the last one was familiar with the potassium. Not really. I'm not apart from a big campaign on the issue. I've asked the health person to show. I've been there, you know, on the production of the movie. That's but the actual thing, and I think the board, what it means, you know, is that I understand the business cases. I could analyze it, come with my finance and strategy team. So I don't have direct experience in the production. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Your views on the role of the SABC as a public broadcast in covering political stuff like elections, and especially if we go into a pre-election period. What do you think the role of the SABC as a public broadcaster must be? Thank you.
Obviously, the elections are a public, you know, public interest. So obviously, we expect that a public broadcaster to broadcast elections. But then you assume that any other profession, accounting or lawyer, there's a code of ethics. That if journalists report, they will give a balanced view. They will give a balanced view. Obviously, as I've seen, looking at the end and looking at the off the end, that it is to come, not drive our democracy and sense making buildings, you know, and all that. So we expect that elections are protected. Then it's the how, the fairness in the reporting, which then the profession, the journalism profession, which is regularly that the journalist is supposed to respect and say, someone was telling me that you can't say someone and say this, there's a good way in journalism, allege, otherwise you can go to court for not using that way. Then someone is standing, then you have to go. So if you heard that the minister standing, then you see the other side of the story. You don't publish that story without checking the other side. So that is another thing we do. But with the election, I think there are public interest that should be protected, but to balance that, all you do, say short funding from the commercial side, then they take this long, this time, we need this to be advertised. So you balance that with other sources of funding. And
what people are doing all your SAA.
Thank you. I'm
going to
take
up all
your questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. It's a follow-up on the question raised by Honorable Sir on the issue of your familiarity in relation to broadcasting. And then we have heard what you have said. Then my question will be, what's your area of specialty? What skills are you bringing if given an opportunity? Secondly, I see you are an MBA graduate. I wanted to know, like you have indicated when the Honorable Michael was raising a question, you said you have read certain documents the SABC has presented, and you might be aware of their turnaround strategy. So given your experience and the challenges that the SABC has been experiencing, how will you assist the board in implementing its turnaround strategy also share with us your understanding of your corporate governance issues. And then there is a company that indicated that you have been a member, Victory Ticket 12560. What does the company do? And then what is your role in the company? And then if afforded an opportunity, don't you see a potential conflict of interest on the way that your company is doing?
Thank you, sir. I think we have started MBA, I told you about analysis strategy and organizational analysis, of course, it's speaking organizational analysis. I started BCom, even in all my postgraduates up to now, the diploma in company direction, I've done finance. So I'll be bringing finance skills, which I think we achieved. I've had the interest in and the strategy skills. So I've been involved in turnaround. The government work that we turn around the whole education system successfully. So I've been around what we turn around strategies. Even in the company, right now I'm involved in the best basis, the phases in implementing it, you know, in ESCOM. So I'm involved in that. I've been involved in 2010, I think, for the recognition for the work I've done in the 2010 strategy. So that's an area of strength. Some of the people say are overanalyzed, you know. So I'll bring the strategic skills and the finance skills. But the company, I say, the company I formed long before I went to England. I had a house. I thought I was making a very breakfast visit with one of the women I was part of in the NGO to run a very breakfast. So it probably didn't done much in one NGO. Because, you see, after the foreign training, my late husband was a Ghanaian. I thought about the first thing that they don't have, I've seen that they previous things. But really, there isn't much. We've not been very active in that. If anything, even if it's operating, it has nothing to do with any SABC. But it's not like a very active. But when I wrote a paper for Msobongo, or the paper I could see my TV, for Msobongo Youth Fund, the new NYDA. So I use that, that's keeping it active too. So if you look at the Google, if you see that the basic ticket that I've used, that's if I had to do consulting or something, whatever, so I use it for that. So it's not for anything, nothing to do with. With broadcasting or entertainment. So I can assure you this. Thank you.
Thanks. It's basically the same question that I asked the previous candidate. Do you think your membership of the political party that you belong to will in any way impede you from behaving and acting independently as a member of the SNC board? And I say that given the recent debates about media freedom and the tribunal and all these sorts of issues, and you know, what is your understanding of that media freedom and the role of the press in general?
Thank you,
Emma.
Please,
yes.
I think, when I look at this, if you look at the mental ability that people have studied with people in some of the top defending courses in investigation. So I always say, when people do things, in commercial law, the police are treating me, they're starting to say a reasonable man. Don't let it be a party. To me, it's my career managing, and I always say, okay, I'm accountable to God before I face him. Well, I want you to do something that is not acceptable, or before, honestly, I'm not a pushover, before you do something that is not right. So do something that when you begin sleep looking the feeling at night, you can sleep with, because they're spending. You know, so all that in the media thing, let me tell you the other story we had when I was a union leader. We were called to this school. Our good colleague went on leave. We didn't take a leave officially, and then the police said, you don't want the patient. And I knew in the audience, when I told them, he said, the meeting till 11 o'clock at night. Then I hear the women, you know, this, that I hear them, you know what? I kind of thought, this is where I'm going again. So I said, guys, can you focus? You go outside. I realized the comrade didn't come to work, drove around. It was in cities, drove around, bring people to the around the same village. Then here we are, we come into a transformation. I said, guys, if anything, we all be parented and apologize. And look, I didn't join the union that we won't teach the kids. I said, I'm going back there, I'll leave. The apology is starting. And comrade, they expect me to behave. Then I said, 3 hours, I'm even arguing, and probably in my case I was maybe the leadership, they are not well pleased. Then I was saying, but do what is right. How many of us have extended family that are relying on social grants that they really need to support? So you do what is right, even with the media, so the independence of that, we don't have to interfere. And the professional collective, I think if there's a weakness in the broadcasting or television regulating authority, then that is just dispensing and do what is right. So I believe do what is right. At the end of the day, it's my own career. You know, whether I have to give them decide, I always have a concept of support. Even if you fire me tomorrow, what is my job? That's my approach to life. But I'm a believer. If you see that I'm related, I'm a believer, it's driven. You know, I will allow that to agree to disagree. Whatever the day, if you agree on something, it must make sense. And I apply my mind on it. And I'm coming to the risk is here. Let me agree, let me identify it as a risk. So really, better do what is right. In most cases, don't sell your soul. Thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen. You will be notified in due course. The committee is still going to do some deliberations after we have interviewed all our candidates. And then the committee session will notify you. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much to you, Chair and the members. Looking forward to serve my country in this.
We'll call you the next time. Good morning, Professor Luca Mofomo. How are you? I'm all right. Professor, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and why are you here? And why do you want to become a board member of the FAEC? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Luca David Mofomo. Coming from Pretoria today. And working at the University of South Africa as the DDC Elder Support Center First. My background is in religion. I'm an ethicist, having worked in the church for a number of years and having had the opportunity of studying just beyond the ministry and thereby becoming a lecturer, head of department, and a full-time professor at the University of South Africa. And going through the ranks to becoming administrator, responsible for interference. I'm here today to be interviewed to become one of the members of the FABC. Why? Because I feel I have a contribution to make, particularly in issues pertaining to education, to interfaith, because currently I'm responsible in organizing the National Interfaith Leaders Council, which is a multiplicity of faith groupings, drawing, as it were, all the faith religious organizations that were hitherto excluded from the main center as in the past. And why do we do this? We do this because it is important to shape understanding and collaboration among religions, particularly in tapping the rich resources of religion in the development of our people, hence this particular responsibility. And I was also attracted when I looked into the SABC objective, namely to inform, to educate, and to entertain. And my brief my hobby would be in the area of education. But not that exclusively, because in the University of South Africa, as part of my responsibility some 3 years ago, was in operations and was responsible in dealing with human resources. So the issues of the relationship between the employer and the employee, all those issues that pertain to how best to make employers be productive and also buy in terms of ensuring that they're not there to work as a part and part of the organization. The whole issue of transformation, change management, and the issue of insight. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you,
Madam.
Honorable meeting, honorable Michael, honorable Mutami, honorable Zoni, honorable Ben.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, Professor. I think you listening to you, you are a very wise man with very strong views in your life. You know where you're going to, where you're coming from, what you want in life. I presume you're very sure about that. But being part of a board, it's not always very easy to go in a certain direction because you have to sort of fit in with the rest of the board's decision. What do you do if, for instance, the board makes a wrong decision, but from your point of view? What would your reaction be? Just, okay, really don't spill the beans or whatever, just go on and forgot about what happened. That is the first instance. And then, secondly, now all the years, politics and the NCBC is always on the cards, and you know that. NCBC being accused since the PW Botha era of interfering and etc., etc. And now, even in the new dispensation, the same story carries on of political interference in the business of the SABC. We are entering now a very important stage, the pre-election stage. Your views on the role of the public broadcaster, especially in the pre-election period when the emotions are heated up, etc. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. First is, what would I do when we differ? There is no organization where there are no differences. But there are rules of the game which are set up, which members must adhere. And part of one become a board member or part of any effective decision making body is that must influence each other. And the issue of integrity is very important. Particularly to understand our mandate. If we differ, we must go back and say, are we still executing, discharging our mandate? I think that for me would be the cornerstone, the most important point. Are we in this, when we define our decision, are decisions in the best interest of the organization, the best interest of the SABC, first and foremost? And if that we cannot find one of them, there must be a way of how to adjudicate when the differences are so stark. And I suspect those are the rules of the game in an organization that we introduced to. But I don't think that spilling the beans would be the first priority. Unless one reaches a point at which you say there is no emphasis. But I think what is important is to influence one another, to reach a decision as a collective, in terms of what we do, in terms of how we develop the SABC to become the best public broadcaster for the society, for our society. Second, the interference story. Politics is often defined as the survival of the fittest. And this is a lesson to Machiavellian understanding that you go to the state of nature where everything hangs and breaks loose. But my view is that politics is what we can and must do together. And that decision factor must be a way in which to craft the new way of understanding. Remember, we are building a new society. This is a fledgling democracy. And the rules of the game may not be very clear as of now. But it is important to understand that only one single goal is for us to be able to build a very strong democratic South Africa in which everybody has a sense of belonging. And this is the idea. Whether we differ in terms of how we approach that one, it's a question of politics, but the idea that this is what we need to deliver. And of course, the public broadcaster will be providing space for each political party to make their manifesto, their statement, which is part of the mandate, to inform, basically, so that the public will then decide who is best to deliver on this idea of a democratic and cohesive society.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome, Professor. I hope you enjoy the sun today, because I like being from Pretoria, and we haven't seen the sun since Christmas Day. So enjoy while you're down here. Make sure you water tight when you get back to Pretoria.
Indeed.
Professor, what particular skill, and I know you have many, but which one in particular would you bring to the SABC board in terms of restoring stability and, for lack of a better word, gravitas to this most important board? What particular link with regard to leadership or business skills or broadcasting knowledge, what would your specific skill be?
The three skills I'm bringing, all of them intertwined. First is the leadership skill. When I was appointed at the University of South Africa as a senior lecturer, I demonstrated that leadership by the way in which I was able to take the university from a state of a transformed institution to a state of transformation by being a leader of the UNISA Broad Transformation Fund, which navigated and deliver the institution in the current in which it is now today. Second, I bring ethical concern, ethical skill, because I'm an ethicist. How you make decisions, how you balance in making decisions, the way in which decisions must serve the ultimate goal, which is the best interest of those that might be served. So those are the key elements I bring to the SABC board.
Thank you, Professor. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
I see in your declaration for me, you have declared that you don't have any business interest. I just want you to confirm that to this. Secondly, on the issue of your leadership skills, I've been reading, it said you are a professor of ethics. One is interested. So the question will be around corporate governance issues. You'll agree with us that one of the things that the SABC has been struggling with. So can you share with us your understanding of corporate governance issues? Secondly, your understanding of financial management issues. There's been a lot of non-compliance with PFA and legislation. I want you to link to that. And then lastly, would be how will you deal with change management processes in the SABC?
Thank you so much, madam. You got so many questions at the same time, that's okay. The first one has to do with declaration, my business interest in relation to SABC. That's it. Yes, I said I have no business interest in the SABC. I want to confirm that. Second, you wanted to know about my ethical skills and how this contributes in the main to the issues of compliance. Part of my responsibility in the university is also to make sure that the tone of compliance must be set at the office where I sit. In fact, I call my office a compliance office. Why do I say this? Whatever comes to me, first I ask the question. Does it comply with the rules and procedures of the institution? And those elements must be attached for me to obtain my signature. Otherwise, my signature will not go to any paper until I'm sure that the compliance procedures have been adhered to in line with the policy of the institution. I also sit in the in a committee, what we call it, the committee to get people to apply for work, to apply for tenders, what we call tender committee. I sit in there as well. And part of the responsibility of sitting in tender committee is also to look at the compliance in terms of the EE, employment certificate. For example, you have companies that will tell you only about we have some so-and-so who is part of us. But in essence, the ownership is not there. So part of my role is that the role of the university and its procedures in terms of compliance is adhered to. So my role in the SABC is to make sure that I bring the skill of compliance, my ethical skill, to make sure in terms of also looking at the rules, each time we look at what we have to be considered, whether those have been followed as have been considered by the institution. So I think it's important that those are the elements at the center of what we do. Because compliance has been a problem in a number of places, but not only in SABC, a number of places, but we are watchdogs. We represent the people. We represent the nation. We want to make sure that when we present our account at the end of the year, our accounts are not qualified. So that will be the purpose of my sitting at the SABC board. When it comes to financial management, I manage, as I speak now, something to the tune of 400 million in my own unit, because there are several units. And I also manage a project which is unique to us, a relationship between UNISA and the government of Ethiopia, where we are producing, as a result of the agreement, 10,000 master students and 2,000 PhD students. And that amount of the project is 75 million. So in terms of compliance, those are things that deal with almost on a daily basis.
Thanks, Jerry. It's the same question roughly that I've asked before. I'm not sure whether you are a member of a political party or not, but do you think that your political views may in any way affect your ability to exercise your role and responsibility as a member of the board in any particular way? And I say this particularly given the debates that have been going on in our country about the media press freedom and the issue of the proposed media tribunal.
Chair, first and foremost, I'm a scholar. And the role of scholar is to investigate. The role of scholar is to adduce new knowledge and to participate in a bigger debate on issues. So I don't easily get swayed out of this book or that way. I look at what it is in terms of at the center of that investigation, what I adduce, and make sure that I convince others, influence others about that. I'm a member of the ANC. I'm very active in ANC, so that I cannot hide. Let us be a political animal, a religious animal, but I have a role to play in society and building South Africa. I will engage whoever on matters of society, on matters of politics, on matters of ethics, whatever. But that will be in the interest of advancing the cause of the democracy. It doesn't happen that you are constituted as a body with a chairperson, with a national allocation, and one person walks out and makes a decision about the body. What is important is that there are processes. I suspect that there is a process that indicates how the board functions. I've seen the last summer. All the decisions are made in a formally constituted meeting. If we cannot agree in that meeting, having had the opportunity to discuss the issue, which the chairperson would invite the House, invite the meeting, to test the support of this position. If the position taken is one that the whole satisfies, but I would not encourage a situation where one simply goes and makes a decision out there, because that would have a direct implication in terms of cohesiveness of this body. Whether the center holds the open speaking policy, whether the center holds, because the chair of the body is a very significant person who actually, at any given cooperative environment, stand and make pronouncements. And this, the support of the chair is very, very important. We don't support the chair as a person. We support the chair as the office that he occupies. So anybody who has a mind that, would, for me, my ethical principle was not allowed. It was very important that the chair of an organization, once you're placed there, is the office, there's no deal with the office. If we are not happy about the different spot. But the issue of corporate collective decision making in the body are the principles right there. Once we have that as the basis of how we function, we cannot, unless we agree at some point that we're no longer using that as a model, then we can do otherwise. But once we say this is the way we do things, we can't, for example, come to you and somebody stands there and reports that, and somebody stands there and reports. It's not done. It's not done. You can't count them. The issue of whether SABC board is compliant to the Act itself. What I have read is that the issue of change management, which became a thorny issue, was the issue of compliance. The issue of wasteful expenditure for all issues of compliance. Issues of human resource, about employer-employee relationship, that also is an important issue with respect to change management. How do you make workers, employees, part and parcel of this environment? My view is this, that the employees are not appendages of an organization. In fact, it is often said that any organization is dependent on its income. So they are an asset. The way we deal with them is very, very important. So we need to empower them. Now, what does empowerment mean? It means we need to ensure that they bring their skills, their brains to bear on the organization. If there's a change that has to happen, first and foremost, we need to lessen anxiety from our by telling them what benefits would be accrued for them through this process of change. We need also to inform them that this change would make them better and effective workers. We need to connect them to the understanding that as workers, they will contribute better to themselves and others, and in the building of society. So what is the important anecdote or antidote is that against fear is knowledge. Most of the problem why you have people resisting is that there is no communication. They see action taking place, and people are certain about their future, their livelihood, and for that reason they resist or they strike. So it is the issue of communication and better understanding of the relationship, and adjudicating that relationship, for me is very, very important. I saw that when I was the portfolio manager of HR. During my time, there was no strike at the University of South Africa because of the way I related with the union on matters that affected their lives in the water. So that's, for me, how I can make a difference.
Thank you, Chairperson. Professor Mukoma, welcome.
Thank you.
Tensions in the SABC have been in the public domain. First of all, I would like to know what is your understanding of the interpretations perhaps from a public viewpoint. And how do you think these tensions could be avoided in the future? Secondly, I do appreciate the fact that you have and you do play an management hand on role within the minister. But since the board is essentially a policy making, providing policy guidance to the corporation, there have been accusations, rightly or wrongly, that the current board and the previous board have the tendency of wanting to micromanage the SABC. How would you assist the board to resist the temptation that they do so? Instead, the last one, when you presented yourself, you said that you come with leadership skills. I presume I stand to be corrected that within the broad framework of leadership skills, conflict management is assumed. there have been conflicts in that part which almost rendered it paralyzed. What we used to do to ensure that the board does not one proceed to a conflict situation which paralyzes completely, and secondly, in case it does fall into that trap, what would be your contribution to ensure that we emerge out of that conflict situation?
Questions are quite longish, and I'll spend through the rest of them in the manner in which you put them. If I missed one of those, please don't hesitate to come back.
Don't worry, they are late anyhow. Yeah.
Well, through the media, I have read about the problems in the FABC. It related to issues of governance, mismanagement of some sort. In the issues of personality were also sharply raised. Of course, the individual what it takes to stand alone and make decisions and so forth and so forth. The issue I am aware of is that there are rules that need to be followed. And they find that many individuals get appointed and there is no way of socializing them through the rules to understand. And also training them in team management. Because when people come from different places, they come with their own orientation. But it's important first and foremost that they be a person taking through board members. What are your duties and responsibilities? Are we on the same page? Do we understand our responsibilities, all of us, in the same way? I think that for me that would be the key issue. And second, also to understand that we come to this board, although we share one common purpose, they are also political interests. There might be political issues that may arise. The question that is, in the interest of the whole, how do we bracket our differences so that we execute that which is before us? How do we do that? Maybe the stakes may be very high. The stakes may be very high. And this is the test of leadership for me. Because the leader, other than simply motivating, inspiring, and creating the conditions for things to happen, the leader must also create what I call intellectual development. Now, the issue is whether there are possibilities for this to happen. And also it has to do with a different level of habilitation. How do we all work together for the same purpose? Now, my contribution in this regard would be to request that we have conflict management approach to the issue. But I know that this is not an easy thing. And the board is not, has been appointed before, and it has been problems. But I think we need to have make sure that we create the possibility of conflict management, team management, for members of the board to really cohere and bond and understand in terms of what it has to do. The issue you have raised is very, very important, is the role or the thin line between governance and the management. Governance is a policy making decision body, as the board as the board will be doing. But it don't stand there. The issue is to check whether the policies you make are actually attached. The directives you give actually yield in terms of creating a stable and profitable organization. is where the board, when it meets, it has to interface between the management and in terms of policy application. It may well be when the management has done their own set, their own objectives, they must come to us and say, these are the things we want to accomplish. Now, in terms of the policy requirements, the resources are given in this way. Each time we meet, we must monitor whether that is actually happening in the manner in which it has to happen. The CEO of the organization is the highest accountable person in that regard. We need to share in the vision to support the vision of the organization so that it represents the ideal that the nation wants. So I believe that my role was really making this Titanic boat or ship to float amidst the torrent of the sea.
Thank you, Professor. You will be notified in due course after the portfolio committee deliberation. Then you will know about if you are successful or not. Thanks very much. I hope you have a safe journey to Johannesburg. Honourable members, I am informed that the tea outside. Can we go and drink tea and come back? Thanks.
probably start by saying ABC has got shareholders. And mainly the shareholders are South Africans. And the shareholders always give a mandate to the board to look after their interest. And if their interests are served well, they normally retain the board, And if their interest, if the shareholder's interest, which as I said, the South Africans, they kick out the board. And the shareholders also like to see the board sticking to the strategy, issues rather than not the management issues, to make sure that the boat is sailing on the right direction. Underlying all of that, the function of the board is that of governance. Whether it's the issues of financing, whether it's the issues of procurement, it's got to look after that properly. But one of the greatest functions of the board is got to look after is the issue of how to mitigate risk and manage the risk for the organization, be it in HR or the outsiders. And one of the things which I think probably are more important is to depersonalize the issue. Rather than the micromanager, the board is supposed to be a strategy body which does not interfere in the management of the organization, but in the strategy and the risk mitigation of the organization. I think that is probably, in terms of a summary, how the why I'm here.
Thank you, Mr.
Dallas.
Any Honorable Michael.
Most of the month. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you have just mentioned the most critical issue of the micromanagement based on that, I want you to tell us that if there's any intervention by the minister, like you said before, when the SABC is appointed, do you regard the intervention by the minister as political interference or macromanagement? And what do you think the relationship should be between the minister as a political head and the SABC board? Second question will be in regards to their conflict of interest. I've been trying to go through whether the first comment from the committee. I can't see anything. I want you to tell us, do you have any interest or any company that has any interest on the committee? So here there's nothing that is declared. Maybe you can tell us about that. And the other thing is the issue of other boards that you are a member of or you are the director. In one of it, you are in the chapter. I just want to check what is your role in those boards. Will we have enough time to share with this other board and the SABC? Lastly, it's in regards to the funding model. I know we are not attending you for the first time. You might be facing this question for the second time since I've been a member of this committee. But you are familiar with the current funding model of the SABC. What do you think about it? Do you think it needs to be reviewed or is it okay the way it is? And lastly, in terms of the skills that we have, what really are you bringing, if by any chance we appoint you? What skills will you bring to the board? that you can, what is currently there. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think that's going to be quite a bit part of this. The first question is about the person who embodies the interest of the shareholders in terms of where does the issue of the corporation sit, and that is the Department of Communication. The intervention that happened, as I read it, was because there were what are called antagonistic relationships within the body, within the board. And I think those antagonistic relationships emerged purely probably out of, let's say, personality issues, such that there was a breakdown in terms of how they could see themselves working forward. And when there is such a breakdown and such a crisis, who else would there be to see that the running of the organization is in uneven keel? And I think the minister sort of tells what that money is being given, I would say, by the parliament to ensure that things are running smoothly rather than the rocky relationship that was happening. You might have heard me when I said some of these things are related to somewhere when people tend to become personally involved in the running of the organization. And then they cannot sort of divorce themselves from are we strategists here who then appoint the executives to run the board, to run the organization, whilst you sort of get the report and give input now and again. So in short, the interest of the public, who is the shareholder, are represented by the minister. And I would say at that point in time, because there was that breakdown of relationships, the antagonism within the board, somebody had to take some kind of action to put that on track. The second question was raised the issue of the corporate. Do I have any conflict of interest? No, I do not. The board in which I sit is the world you consulting. It's an HR consulting company which comes more with management intervention as well as companies that is able to do, mainly in terms of the banking and in the manufacturing industry. The other one, I mean, is two mining companies. One is Chemwest and the other is as a real mining company. So definitely on that side, there is no conflict of interest. There's one more interesting one. The shareholder, who is the public, needs to get what they want from the board, I mean from this organization. And now and again, because you've got a serious variety in terms of the population of South Africa, now and again, because it is not a commercial entity, therefore, now and again, you're going to need a fund from the government, now and again, from the licenses, and probably through the as well as probably called the licenses as a form of tax. I do not know currently if there's an integration which is set aside by FABC. Would I recommend it? No, I would not. I would probably be happy with
you're running a commercial station, you focus on an area where you know that you're going to get enough advertising to be able to look after your overhead. I think if you look at our Robinson Limited, it's getting the Northern Cape, for example. I do not know of any commercial radio station that could be established in the Northern Cape and run successfully commercially. But the shareholder who is in the Northern Cape needs to be serviced by the SABC. So there will be those shortfalls where areas with high population like Cape Town and Joburg will have to subsidize your smaller ones. What skills would I like, or would I propose? I am a journalist by training. And a pretty good one at that. I didn't take as much of it, but I passed well, which is why I've sort of been involved in your PR companies before in marketing, so that my writing skills are pretty good. One area which I sort of always see within the SABC as a whole that is sort of taken a backseat is the issue, the issues relating to rural issues. I mean, the tendency is to say we cater for age group 18 to 35, which is more urban. If you listen to either the TV or the radio, where do you get your agricultural programs, which would sort of benefit some communities in the rural area? You don't get them. You find them in the fringes, say at about 3:45 in the morning, and about 5:15 in the morning in some radio stations. And somehow, that population, that shareholder, is not being serviced whatsoever. And lastly, in terms of bringing positivity into the whole thing, my suggestion is that every time a board is constituted, there should be more non-executive members than executive, such that the voice of the outside is heard much better than from the bodies who have interest, because they will say, I have to give my A, B, and C, and if you are in the minority as non-exec, you said, I will not be able to try the issue. I think I've touched on all the issues now.
I just want to know Mr. Danana, John Sandy Danana, yes. On the Broadcasting Act, on the commission and the character of the board, it says under clause 4A, members of the board, when good quality, we say the person who has to take the serve on the board by virtue of their expertise, experience in the field of broadcasting policy, technology, broadcasting regulations, media law, frequency planning, business practice and finance, marketing, journalism, entertainment, and social and labor issues. And it also goes down to B, where it speaks about fairness. I just want to end the freedom of expression. I think also on the very act, on chapter 4, it speaks about this in the charter. It speaks about the fairness and freedom of expression. And I want to know, in your view, what is your understanding about the freedom of expression that this law is talking about, and also explain to you exactly what are the things that you'll be bringing in terms of the qualifications that I'm allocating. I also want to know another question following what I've asked. What is your understanding of corporate governance? How the SABC has gone about this transforming the SABC from what it was in the last era and what we are doing now? Can you elaborate on exactly what you think should be done that calculates the issues that we are involved in transforming? When you speak about transforming a public broadcaster, what do you mean? Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. The act is pretty explicit on the issue of who is needed to come and represent the board. And I'm touch on that question first. My experience, my background as a journalist, and also my background as a business person, because I decided to follow the issue by studying the MBA and to focus on issues of strategy specifically. And I think the board would benefit from my skills as a qualified business person and as a practicing business person. And also, you could benefit from the issues of journalism. Let me start with journalism. You know, when you sort of listen to all the radio stations, you'd say driving from Johannesburg to East London, you pick up quite a number of radio stations. And especially during New Year's time, you find that somehow there is a policy which says, you start with this story and you end up with this story. And I find that, I mean, there are stories which are more burning, for example, in Free State. So they would not make, for example, a story from Iraq. In terms of balancing the news regionally, I believe the editor regionally should be able to be given that latitude of ranking the stories, starting regionally, going nationally and then internationally, rather than being given a directive, say from head office, to say, you shall cover story A, B, and C, and D, and close the news. That, I think, that perspective, I think I would bring it pretty close to the strategy of the board, that the regional interests do need to be looked after pretty well. On the business side, the SABC is the biggest producer of news. But do they make money out of selling those news? Say to the other commercial radio stations, or to other commercial TV, or commercial, or the print media? I think there's an opportunity there today to say, we'd rather the news disseminate it, but if people want to buy it, they should be able to buy it at a price. Then, coming to the issue of the freedom of expression, this country has fought for that. It fought for that freedom of expression. And I think that basic right should never be reserved from the shareholder, because, as I said, the shareholder is the public. So the shareholder should have right, or the public of South Africa, or any member of the public, should be able to express their views and be engaged rather than sort of drowned out in some kind of a noise. So fundamentally, fortunately, this was part of our studies in journalism and media studies, that as long as you have free flow of information, you have got a better society. When you start dishing out information as you like, you are now trying to engineer the society to do what you want. And I don't think we would like to go back to that, to the era of trying to social engineer people to think in a certain way. I mean, for example, if you ask people, just go outside and say, ask a few people, who voted for the National Party? You find that nobody wants to be associated with that kind of social engineering that happened. Because while it was degrading amongst the black, it was also really pulling the whole society down. Then I would like to address now the issue of government. The issue of government is the realm of the board and the board only. Because if you do not have a government, then you might as well have free for all kind of a situation. Government is there to make sure that things go according to the rule. The shareholders are putting you there to look after their interest. One, there must be a policy. I mean, the policy, for example, we've spoken about the transformation policy. That policy has not been carried out. For example, if part of the transformation strategy says you need to have so many disabled people within the organization when you never had any before, then you need to either go out and source the skills or train people to get to that level so that even the disabled are represented within the organization. You will find skills everywhere, but if you do not harness them, they will keep on leaving. But if you harness them and you develop them and make sure that you retain them for as long as you can, you are now sort of starting to address the issues of transformation. And as I said initially, issues of governance are important in terms of, you've mentioned the issue of conflict of interest. And you know that part of the fallout within the previous board at the SABC was exactly the issue of, I have a company, I registered it in my cousin's name, or in my cousin's company name, and I give it a pie within the organization, and I keep quiet about it. And somebody finds out about it. So those issues, I mean, that issue would kill the finances of the company, would kill the procurement policy of the company. That's why the conflicts are a risk to the company. And how do you mitigate and how do you manage this as we go along? By sticking to the rules of government. Either as I said, financially, procurement, the risk, and in the employment practice. I hope I've answered your question now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, sir. You expressed a couple of views of freedom of expression and those type of things. Just want to ask you, being a member of the ACPC board, sometimes you've got your own views and you believe in that value. But what do you, for instance, do when the board, of course you are part of a collective, take a decision, for instance, on whatever, and you're not satisfied with that? Will you speak up? and try to fight for your values, or do you sort of capitulate or whatever? And secondly, we are moving into a pre-election phase. What is your view on the role of the SABC as a public broadcaster, especially when it's all about political stuff? And then I'm glad to see you're a keen rugby player. And what did you do to give rugby its rightful place back on SABC radio and television? Thank you.
And on the issue of, I mean, clash of values. The body where you sit and debate your issues. And it is incumbent upon a board member to make sure that you convince the other board members on your view. But somehow, the wisdom of, say, the majority sometimes prevails. But it's always good to make sure that you do not go out of that board meeting without having expressed your view. That's number one. And number two, being convinced that the contrary view is actually, if not better, something that people can live with. Being a collective, as soon as there is an agreement within that closed room, I believe the collective should go out with that view. You express your dissatisfaction, you express your disagreement, and you listen to the others. Because it also goes to the issue of listening. Because if you are not listening to them, you might not hear what they are saying. You might be talking past each other. We used to do this some time back when we are sitting in a board and we tend to disagree, and then we finally find a consensus. What we do is take the person who was vehemently opposed to the whole issue and say, we are mandating you now to go out and sell this decision because you were part of the team. Therefore, you cannot go outside and express your disappointment, though. You've got to go out and express what has been decided by the board of which you are part of, even if you are voted out. So I have a feeling that a personal view can be, yes, in conflict, but it's because you are probably talking past each other. When you start listening to each other, you'll get probably a better understanding. Elections 2011, a very interesting time. Fortunately, in the last election, there was a policy which came out of the board which said you will give each party equal amount of time in terms of the air time, in terms of viewing time, so that everybody is able, every party, and even probably non-existing parties, have a share in terms of that. And I believe that that is serving the shareholder much better to get all these views without anyone being dominated. Rugby, passion for the sport. Because I grew up in the same case, there was no soccer. Soccer is a new thing, just for us in the same case. How do we get it back onto the soccer is also complaining that cricket is being given prime time. I mean, SABC 3 will suspend news for cricket. Well, it was a good cricket game, South Africa won on that day, yesterday it was. The sporting policy, I really do not understand how it is. For example, If you remember, there was a time where they would say, we've got a match starting at 6, but we only start broadcasting it at 7:15, when the match was not about to be over. I think a sports channel has got to come up, one or two, because they bring the money, they bring sponsorship, and that is another avenue for financial growth of the company. I mean, rugby is being sponsored left, right, and center. Why can't we have a sporting channel there? And
I'm going to ignore the anti-cricketing remarks. The question I want to ask is your political views. Are you a member of any political party? And if so, do you think that this may affect your ability to exercise your role as a board member? And I say this particularly given the recent debates about media, especially at the tribunal, all these kind of matters, and your understanding of that issue.
Can I come to the issue of the tribunal? I think that's the hit of the wave. Somebody thought about this. And somehow, somebody thought that this would probably fly. And it was the heat of the moment. My expression for freedom of expression states, you do not want to be a gulag or to be Stalinist and tell people that you can say this or you can't say this. I mean, we live in a world where there's Facebook, where there's Twitter, where the internet goes beyond everything. You can stop it here, but it's going to be a flood which comes over from the other side. So the idea of the tribunal, I think, probably, is going to be dying a natural death some time or later. Because I think it was an issue which was motivated by the heat of the moment. Political views. Do I belong to any party? Yes, I'm a member of the African National Congress, and I have been. Do I attend bench meetings? Once in a while, I do. I've helped with that for the chief. Is my independence in terms of making decisions tainted? No, I do not think so. Purely because, for example, belonging to a church, as I do, neither can you afford to address huge crowds being a member of the very thing that preaches. And then, in that forum, you are expected to be healing souls. You're not expected to be asking, who are you, by the way? Can I address your spirituality after I've addressed this one? No. You take them all at one go and you address a church congregation in that way. You do not try and separate. And in a lot of forums, it's one of forums. In a lot of forums, there are a number of people which are either this or that, or that ethnic group or that, or coming from a privileged background or a very poor background. Now, at that point, your political persuasion cannot precede the focus on what you should be doing. So, how about my better question there?
I feel I should ask this question. There are these, you know, we have got such experience from the board that we have appointed him. And some of the things are things that you never expected to arise from knowledgeable people and professional people. So we have to ask some of the questions you will excuse Mr. Ghanam. We've got Parliament as this biggest institution and the public institution. And we have SABC as a corporation, the public broadcasting corporation. What do you think the relationship of these two should be when you carry out your work as a board member? Just explain to me what you think the relationship of the two would be, Parliament and SABC.
You mentioned first the issue of the conflict amongst knowledgeable people. And I would ask myself, what drives that? Is it personal interest? And I have a feeling that it is. Or is it an issue of, you know, when a pack of dogs are attacking, they attack the other pack of dogs, because they've got traces of one blood to settle over it. We know when those castes form, I think that's what leads to those kinds of conflicts, which is always why, as I've said in the board, I've always said my individual interests are out. I mean, as soon as I move in office, I'm out of time. The job of I've come here to do is kind of a job. You don't need to be anachronistic towards any person here. You have come to serve the same purpose. You may be coming from different strengths, but you've come to serve the same purpose. So I think if people focus on the issue of government, as I did before, they will find one another to be focusing on a single thing. Now the issue about the relationship between Parliament and the SABC. The SABC board is elected here by a constituted committee of Parliament. And after the interviews, the appointments are made. And therefore it means that Parliament has got confidence, because Parliament represents the interest of the shareholder, who is the public. Therefore, there should be a regular conversation between Parliament and the board. We are here now, we've moved on to here now. We have a crisis. We have issues to celebrate. So, because the whole, I mean, even the bill comes out of Parliament for the public broadcasting, but it's not a commercial issue. It's a public broadcaster. The interests are held here by the representatives of the shareholders. Should it be an antagonistic relationship? No. Yes, I believe it should be a professional relationship. When Parliament says, we will meet you on these dates of the year, please let's stick to the dates of the year rather than to have some other subsequent meetings which happen along the way. Let's keep the program that the first quarter becomes this time, and to come on the last quarter at this time. feedback on the ups and the downs, probably more on the ups than the downs. But no matter about the downs, the shareholders don't look well about this, which is why when you're elected now as the board, you want to show every time your best side to the shareholders. So the shareholder can say, my interests are being looked well after. I can retain that board for the next term because the ship is steering in the right direction at the right speed with the right amount of income for the country. And it is developmental, as I said, for example, I mean, that's one thing that worries me. These little things, I mean, the agricultural program which used to be there before has sort of been put on the fringes, and people could benefit from those in their little gardens and in their homesteads. They never benefit from that again. It's not like that to happen, and probably with the support of Parliament. Thank you.
Yeah, and I've looked at the example that they do in the talk. I'm basing my question precisely because of the previous question I asked you about the charter form, where it also says in the charter, one of the things that the charter is speaking about is independence. Yes. This understanding of the independence. Mm-hmm. You know, we once had a situation here of a board that came and there were so many problems in the SADC. You could see that members of this board think Parliament has nothing to do with what they are doing. They even show that they are professional people. And we are not supposed really to intervene in what they're doing. We have such votes that come in. That's the reason why I'm asking you. I just want to understand if you understand the act of what it means, especially on the independence.
Madam, let me put it this way. Every company that is on the JSE, the exchange, and there is a number of shareholders. The shareholders call a meeting and they elect a board. And one of the rules is that the board with the executive must report back to the shareholders. Because the shareholders are looking for their return on investment. And if there is no return on investment, why should they be retaining the board? And why should they be retaining that interest? Yes, when the board is elected by the shareholders do not intervene on a day-to-day basis because they've elected the board. But there is what you call shareholders meeting, which happens probably every quarter for a listed company or every year for an unlisted company. Let me get back to this point. The shareholders, who is the public, elect representative to Parliament. The Parliament, in its own wisdom, guided by the Act, they interview members of the board and say, now go and look after our interests. Make sure the news will get to the furthest place in this country. And let the information be freely available to everybody who is a resident of this country. Now go and be independent. Act independently without being influenced by A, B, or C, who are also shareholders. Why should our shareholders have more influence on an independent body? than the shareholder who is represented by policy. Yes, that is independent. We're talking about it. But now, the board has got to report in terms of the act, the what goes on within the corporation to the shareholder. It's a shareholder meeting, that's how I understand it. And the shareholder will say, yes, we are satisfied. No, we are satisfied. And the debate starts there. If the shareholder is not satisfied, they will fire the board. And if they're satisfied, they will increase the term of the board. The independence is as to how they are doing their job without being influenced by sort of what is called sort of influential people, shareholders. They must, all those shareholders must be represented here and make sure that the voice of the people is heard from Parliament. And the representative of the shareholder has got every right to attend the shareholders' meeting and express the views. I think that is how I understand it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tarana. Are there any questions? No. Can I ask you one question, Mr. Tarana? Because of you have made an analogy about the spirituality within, you know. But this question is being led by your analogy that you have done. Are you a team player?
I am a good team player. And I've never played what you call the individual sports like tennis, all those. I've always played team sports. And whenever I've been involved in anything, I've always played the game with the team. I don't shine alone, the team shines together.
Thank you very much, Mr. Danana. You will be informed in due course after the committee deliberation if you are successful or not. Thanks very much. Good day, Professor Vishnu Kadiyaki. Can you please give us a brief introduction about yourself? Who are you and what are you doing? And why are you here?
Yeah, I've been nominated for the non-executive directorship of the SABC. My present position is as a senior professor and head of the School of Development Studies at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, where I'm also a fellow of the university. I simultaneously hold three positions at the British universities, as well as various other appointments which I can go into. Why I'm here, or why I believe that I might be able to make a contribution
to broadcasting the SABC in particular, I guess arises from three sets of considerations. Firstly, my own academic training, which I believe is relevant in certain critical areas, particularly economics and finance and banking and accounting, and to some extent auditing commercial and mercantile law, although those were minors in my own studies. I completed a PhD in economics. Secondly, that I have fairly extensive management experience, both academic management in a university context as well as outside, financial management in and outside universities as head of school, one of the largest of universities with a research budget running into hundreds of millions, which turns me more into a manager than an academic. So there's that set of what I call management skills. And thirdly, I have fairly extensive and diverse corporate governance experience, including nearly 12 years as a non-executive director of the South African Reserve Bank, followed by 1 year as a consultant to the board when my three-term limit expired. I had almost 9 years as a deputy chair for six and as a full board member for 9 years at the Impala Development Finance Corporation, and various other details of which are in my CV. I could happily go through them. In each of these organizations, I played roles within subcommittees. I was a member of the Audit Committee of the Reserve Bank for all but one of the years that I was there. I was a member of the Remuneration Committee and the Human Resource Committee from about 2001 to about 2007, and in the last few years, I was first acting chair of the REMCO, as well as later chair of the Remuneration Committee. At the Impala, I was deputy chairperson. I was a member of the Audit Committee almost continuously from, I think, 2003. The details are in the CV. I was a founding member of the Council of the University of KwaZulu-Natal and served on its Finance Committee. And I also was a member of the Board of Directors of Cricket South Africa, where I also served on its Audit Committee. So that is, as well as currently being a non-executive director of a company called ICB, which is the South African subsidiary of a global company called VCB, which operates in the kind of nexus between finance, IT, and business intelligence. So, in a sort of summarized form, that's what I consider to be the skills that I would bring to a membership of a board such as the SABC. Thank you, Chair. On the last question, let me deal with the issue of the other companies. There is no conflict of interest. Of the companies that I've listed, I'm including the Reserve Bank, Itala, and others, I'm not a member of any of those boards at the moment. Most of those have term limits, and in Italos, it was three terms, in the Reserve Bank, it was three terms, not statutorily, but that's what the Ministry of Finance now imposes. The only board that I'm currently on executive director of is ICB, and it operates in South Africa with a global sort of holding company, if you like, and it really is an IT product, a business intelligence product, if you like, that allows the validation of invoices between debtors and creditors in order to facilitate rapid, quick payment of these invoices, especially from small business, but it's not discretionary in any sense. And what that allows is small businesses especially to get 70% of the invoice value on validation instead of waiting either 3 months or 6 months or 9 months. It's a company globally and in South Africa in its early phases, and it requires lots of technical stuff to happen within the banks and so on in order to make it operational. So in respect of ICB, I hope that you would follow from there that there doesn't, certainly not, I can't see any obvious or any even remote conflict of interest with the SABC as a public broadcaster. In respect of your second question, as I think my summary suggested, I have been involved for a long time in very significant boards such as the Reserve Bank. There probably aren't many more important institutions, if you like, in what may be broadly defined the public sector in South Africa than that. And I was on that board for nearly 12 years, serving in the audit committee. And that, I think that the work within the audit committee, which is the heart, if you like, of any organization, any company, that experience would be invaluable, dealing with risks, dealing with the basic auditing functions, and IT risks, you know, all kinds of risks there. And the other would be in areas related to human resources and remuneration. It was a very significant role to be the chair of the Remuneration Committee of the Bank, and that dealt with all matters related to the compensation, the appointment. The appointment is made by the President, but all the details relating to the appointment, letters, retirement of the executive. So, Chair of REMCO, I reported in a sense to the Presidency in respect of the Governor and the Deputy Governors, as well as what used to be called the, that layer has disappeared, but there was a sort of layer of executive director just below the deputy governor. All those people's compensation, everything in respect of their appointment, their retirement, even post-retirement was the responsibility of the REMCO, which I chaired for the last 2 years. So I think that those sets of skills in auditing, finance, in terms of, I had extensive direct financial management experience, as I said, both at the university, where my function is largely to provide comfort to the very major funders that provide huge amounts of research funding to the School of Development Studies, including some of the major European, American foundations, and those are very older sort of responsibilities which fall upon the school. I also co-own an antiquarian collective bookshop, which I co-manage with a partner, so I have a direct responsibility for handling what is a fairly global operation, but quite small. And that, I think, is a skill in itself to sort of deal with a relatively small-scale operation, which is quite ambitious, but provides or raises its own challenges in terms of sustainability, for example. I hope that answers some of the questions that you have.
Thank you, Professor. A few questions. My first question is, are you associated with any political party? And if so, which one? Professor, my second question would be this.
I'm sure you understand and you have been briefed as to, you know, what the problems are in the SABC. How do you view financial stability in the SABC at present? How do you view the financial instability of the past? What do you see as the, what were the major problems? And what do you see are the major obstacles financially facing the SABC in the future? And should you be successful in your application to become a board member, how would you go about implementing, obviously financially, because that's your niche, financially, an effective turnaround strategy for an organization that requires major bailouts from the country?
Thank you. On your first question, I am currently not a member of any political party. I was a member of the Western Area branch of the ANC from about 1991. Not sure exactly when that lapsed, but it was sometime at the end of that decade. I simply got involved in lots of work, including through government at the national level, as well as provincially, and wasn't able to actively sort of continue work at France level, and I thought that the best thing for me to do was to concentrate on the responsibilities that government threw my way. In respect of financial stability, I think it's a difficult question for me to really relate to. I looked at the 2010 annual report, and all I have is a snapshot of that. I mean, as a practicing academic, and I've retrained to kind of make conclusions and recommendations and so on the basis of evidence-based research. And I don't really know what the picture is like. I suppose the way it would normally operate is that one hopes the executive would come up with some plans and models, and I certainly feel comfortable with interrogating those in a way that will contribute to ameliorating any of the instability that you point out, and which even the chairman of the board points out in the annual report, and to contribute to a much more sustainable financial future. But I say this, that, I mean, clearly one of the major sources of revenue from what the annual report says comes from advertising. And I was thinking that, just from the point of view of being a customer, if you like, that I think that if we're going to grow that in absolute money terms, then I think that can't be done outside of the serious effort at improving the quality of the product, because that's when advertisers will see that there's some value in it. And I think that, just speaking frankly, I think that the FABC record in terms of the quality of its output, if you like, what it gives to the public of South Africa, which is its constituency mandated, I think is quite mixed. I certainly find radio, for example, to be very good in some ways. I certainly wake up with it at FM and often go to bed with it. But I don't know if the same can be said for television, and I think that's where the revenues would be greatest. And I think that companies need to be able to feel that they're getting some value out of it, and if people are not watching, early reruns or many sort of reruns of programs from the long and distant past, which, then you are going to question that. But I mean, financial sort of turnaround strategies, not so much at the Reserve Bank, which was financially very sound, but at other places like Itala, I think that we certainly have to deal with over and over again over my 9-year period there. So I look forward to contributing to that, but I'm sorry I can't give you a kind of quick sort of snapshot answer to that.
Thank you, Professor. Colleague, Professor. The snapshot you have is the SABC annual report. I believe you have noticed some allergies to the SABC board is currently having. How will you ensure that you have skills in the hand, the transformation and change management the SABC board has to undergo in order to meet its mandate of being a public broadcaster. Secondly, if afforded an opportunity to serve in the board, how would you ensure that the SABC will do the business of performance management? And also, how will you ensure that the board addresses all the seven pillars of the broadcasting, of the public broadcaster? Can you also share with us your understanding of corporate governance? Like you said, you heard the annual report, there are issues of corporate governance that have been raised. How will you go about dealing with that? Thank you.
You may have to help me to
make some notes, but I might need to tease out some of the parts of your question now, if you don't mind. On performance management, I'm just taking the second one. I just missed the first one. I will come back to that in your permission, Chair. I'd be surprised if there isn't one. I'm not sufficiently familiar with whether the SABC has a performance management policy in place and whether that is being successfully implemented or maybe implemented with certain challenges. I find it very difficult to think that in this day and age some form of performance management is not actually practiced. It's practiced, standard practice of most universities, for example. I don't know. So, is it the case, and this is a question, sorry if I could ask a question, is there no performance management strategy, and you're asking how would one actually implement one? Well, if there isn't one, as I said, I'd be surprised. Performance management, especially in a place like a university, throws up many challenges and many academic skills that it's not appropriate to universities. But I don't think that you could say that for an organization like the SABC. There are many models of performance management that are fairly standard, and those should have been discussed, debated, and a policy relating to performance management implemented and monitored for a long time. I mean, it's just something that you need to do. I don't know whether one can, you know, debate it for ever and ever. If I was on the board of the SABC, I would certainly be sort of pushing very strongly for the implementation of an appropriate performance management strategy. And more than that, I'm not sure. I'm not a specialist in broadcasting policy. That's not my skill. I certainly will do everything in my power to master all aspects of that. But it's not, from my experience or my training, something that I'm sort of familiar with. But in terms of monitoring the seven pillars in the policy, if you like, you know, as part of what your last question is about, the corporate governance side. I mean, you know, we've gone through all sorts of codes of governance and rules and regulations relating to corporate governance. If it hasn't happened already, it is critically important that all members of the board of the SABC go through very rigorous corporate governance training, if you like. And that's all available at companies like the Reserve Bank, for example. Every year, the board is exposed to the latest principles. This is just beyond King 1, King 2, and King 3, but there are often things that are going on in England. There were often things going on in other parts of the world, and there were very specialist corporate governance issues related to central banks. So we were sent off to Basel. Similar things can be done, you know, to sort of make that training available and so on. But at one level, much of this depends on the integrity of the board members themselves, the way they would view the organization and the commitment they have to the organization, and the broad principles which are, you know, about ethical standards and behavior dealing with issues like conflict of interest, declarations of interest, transparency in the way in which one makes decisions or contributes to decisions. Those are fairly standard sort of principles that apply on all boards. And if the problems, to come to your first question, if the problems that exist at the SABC or have are a result of inadequate grasp of good corporate governance, that can be dealt with. Not completely, but certainly the training can be provided, and the practice thereafter needs to be sufficiently and very carefully monitored by the chair, the deputy chair, and all the committees, so that those principles become lived practice, if you like, and not just sort of, you know, values and principles in King 3, which people sort of read but don't actually see through. So I don't know whether that covers some of the things that you asked, but if there are things that you think that I needed to develop, I'm happy to do so. I think what, again, that sort of needs a very careful analysis. I mean, if you're saying that if there's a problem between the board and the management, and some of this comes through from the annual report, you could see that. I mean, I've not seen a company which has sort of three boards in one financial year, if you like. So that suggests that there are fairly serious problems. And whether that comes from the relationship between government, the legislature, and the SABC board, or between the SABC board and its executive management, it seems to me, from just as a relative outsider, as it stands now, that both those relationships appear to be problematic. Whether that's because of unclarity in the mandate, I'm not sure whether the SABC has a shareholders pact. If it doesn't, it sort of needs one. Many of these things work best if the legislation is clear, the mandate and charter, the compact between the shareholders, etc., is clear, and the board has got the people and the skills and the experience and the integrity to make it work. And sometimes you just have to rely on those institutional frameworks, if you like, to be clear, unambiguous, and so on. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that two sets of people on the board have different opinions as to whether person X was appointed or wasn't duly appointed. That suggests that there's something that is being left to interpretation, when in these matters that shouldn't be the case at all.
Thanks, Professor. You have stated your political, the fact that you're not a member of any political party. So my question is slightly different than it was to other candidates who have indicated whether they're members. You know, the debate about the media tribunal, the issue of press freedom and the independence of institutions and entities involved in the sphere, what is your view on
Just as a kind of very interested observer, somebody who has not studied the details, I mean, my own view, based on just some of my more general thinking on this, is that the regulation of the media should be left to the media and its own institutions. I think that the debate, which was, I think, quite useful in South African context, did point out, or did come to the conclusion, that there were weaknesses in the self-regulation mechanism within the media, and I think that was important. And there seems to be some, you know, there's perhaps the potential for some agreement about that. But in general, I think that within the sort of lines of the constitution, freedom of expression, etc., and that would apply out of what I've been thinking about, or what we constantly think about in universities, my general view is the media should, as far as possible, regulate itself. There may well be things that need attention, but that's what I'd say. It's also partly a question, I guess, of who appoints the media tribunal and what its composition and structures are, what constituencies make it up, or what are the component elements of that. And I think that, you know, you could possibly get a media tribunal which is appointed in a way that it does not create the impression of the state or whatever trying to control. And that's quite possible. But I think that the early debate in South Africa was not particularly helpful. It was very, you know, us and them. But as that debate unfolded, it became, I think, from, as I said, just as an interested outsider, possible for me to see some way in which it could bridge the gap.
Thank you, Chair. Professor, being that you are a man of many talents and responsibilities, if you were to be appointed to become a member of the SABC board, would you be able to afford the time that is required to give proper devotion to that particular institution? Would you be able to divide your time between your current responsibilities at the university in other boards in which you are serving as well as the SABC board?
Thanks for that. I think that 10 years ago, I would not have made myself available for another board. I was on, in the early 2000s, I was on 7 boards in both the public and the private sector. And I think if you read all the sort of corporate governance codes and so on, that, in my interpretation, would have been too many. And I wouldn't have added on to it. I know there are many people who serve on 20 boards quite happily and so on, but as you said, I have full-time university position. The university is, by the way, very supportive of its academic playing this kind of wider role in society, provided we declare. You have to declare every year, every single source of income outside the university, which has to be approved at a very high level, just one below the Vice Chancellor. So, you know, it's with reluctance that one sort of adds to that. But as I said, I think in answer to an earlier question, there's only one board that I serve on. Yes, I do have the bookshop. I have a family that takes, I have a very young daughter who's sort of a last lamaki, if you like, and is 6.5, and I give her a lot of attention. But as far as the university is concerned, it's good timing. My term as head of school expires very soon. In fact, I'm beyond the 3 years. I have been head of this department for 7 of the last 10 years. And I'm already in overtime. The Deputy Vice Chancellor has asked me to stay on because we are in the process of another reconfiguration of schools. And they urged all heads of school just to stay on for the sake of continuity. But that ends in, as it stands, in at the end of June this year. I do go, I spend less and less time overseas. My positions at both Oxford and Cambridge are very much now research-based, which I do from a distance, with research partners who are with whom over the years I've established very good relations. So I don't need to be there all the time, and the technology these days allows that to continue. I'm going to be at Stellenbosch for 2 months as a STIAS fellow, Stellenbosch Institute for Advanced Studies, in April and May this year. But that actually will free me up rather than I'll still remain the head, but there will be an acting head while I'm away. I think, in general, my responsibilities have dropped and will continue to drop. I'm aware, I'm thinking about the SABC and looking at some of the stuff in the annual report about your meetings and committee meetings, that this is a significant commitment. that it would involve, somebody said, a meeting of the board every month. I'm not sure if that's correct. That would seem a bit excessive, but I'm not sure why that is the case. But if it is, Professor Pavatelli, who's my deputy dean, who was on the board, actually said to me that there was a meeting when she was on the board every month, as well as obviously subcommittee meetings, audit committees, REMCO, I'm not sure the full range of committees. But I will, if appointed, certainly I wouldn't accept something that I can't see through. That if I'm not able to give it the time, the energy, the attention, and so on, then I might as well not have got to this point. And that's just, there was one, besides the board, which where my sort of term naturally ended, I quit the board of Cricket South Africa. It was the UCB at the time, mainly because of, I waited until the World Cup was over, the 2003 World Cup, and then left because I just couldn't manage. And I think what one needs to do that, is honestly. So I'm saying, as I see it now, I certainly can make the commitment. My dean and my deputy vice chancellor are aware of my nomination. I informed them of it immediately, and they were supportive of my continuing through the process. I don't foresee any problems at that level in terms of the university. It's been much, much harder in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Thank you very much, Professor. Professor, I am tempted to say this thing. You are saying there's a board that you're speaking, and because of the commitment that you have, so you have to resign or reduce yourself to those areas. And I think, Professor, you have read from the papers, from the what the television. Precisely so. That is why today we are sitting here interviewing candidates that have been nominated. Because of people have been nominated, interviewed, and to serve the education system. It is not even finished their term. That the term of office is 5 years. So I think they've only served 1.5 or 2 years at every time. So I would like to, Professor, really to consider or just get the correct information about the responsibility of the institution. I think at this point, I wouldn't like, to see people being interviewed and be accepted then, in the middle of the thing that then they resign. And I think as the members of the committee, they are feeling the same, But with that, Professor, let me thank you. You will be informed in due course. The committee will have to sit down and deliberate about these interviews, and then after that, you will hear from us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Just to pick up on that point, just in one comment, if I'm successful, I certainly, short of some major catastrophe like my health falling to pieces, I don't envisage stepping down easily. I mentioned the United Cricket Board only because it was a difficult time at that stage. I don't have the Reserve Bank. I don't have Itala. I don't have many of the other commitments. And as I said, my commitments to the university as head are also declining. Thank you very much. Thank you, members.
Honourable members, I have some few announcements that I want to make, and also I want us to look at the one honorable member on Wednesday, the 26th, will be doing the deliberation for the committee. And again, the DA, the DA won't be available on Tuesday. You are not here attending a conference. Also, that is why we are doing this on Wednesday, because of you are not available. Yeah, on the interview. And also, we will be adopting the minutes, the late last year's minutes, and also adopting